Hello, I'm Rose Savage and welcome to the Follow Yourself Experiment, the podcast where we explore what it really means to follow your own unique path and build a life that feels true to you. Today's guest is Essie Sparrow, a seasoned content creator, accomplished singer-songwriter and all-round creative powerhouse.
Went to drama school and they really like break you down in terms of like they're really strict and they're really like critical. And it took a really long time for me to build confidence back up again. And now it's been about being like, oh my gosh, everyone's an adult, everyone's making it up, just do what you want to do and play.
Her debut EP, Still Upset About It Actually, is a stunning body of work, raw, lyrical and quietly powerful, filled with emotional depth, dreamy textures and the kind of storytelling that resonates deeply. A regular on BBC Introducing and championed by indie tastemakers under the radar, Essie has carved out a distinct space in the UK music scene, earning loyal listeners and critical praise alike. She's building her music career with heart, integrity, and that quiet kind of courage that makes you lean in closer. I'm Rose Savage, and I'm genuinely thrilled to bring you this conversation with someone who's walked her own path with creative clarity and conviction. She's gutsy, a little bit cheeky, thoughtful, self-led, and deeply creative. Exactly the kind of guest this podcast was made for. You're in for a treat. Welcome, Essie Sparrow.
Hello. Oh, an intro.
You're very welcome. It is so great to have you on here and to be in your home. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell me a little bit about your music and what it means to you?
Oh, well, music has meant lots of different things to me across my life, I think. As a younger kid, it was like a little escape almost, like to play and to, I didn't ever really write songs growing up, so just like to do covers, and also like it was like a connection thing, like you'd play it with other people and yeah. That would be really lovely. And now it's more of a real creative outlet, and it's where I kind of channel so much, and it's a real indicator of how I'm doing as well, because when you get to guitar, I don't know, I feel like it all comes out.
So, oh really?
Yeah, it's really fun. So now it means so much more to me, and I think I've only really picked up that later in life. It's also just like part of a little small business that I've started, because my music is also kind of a business.
Yeah. So
it's like a creative outlet, but it's also something that I'm always chipping away at and working on. So I love it so much.
That's amazing. You know, the way you talk about your music is so beautiful, but you're not just a musician, as you say. You think of it as a business, and you're also an incredible content creator. I mean, I've seen you in action, and honestly, it's some kind of magic. You've got such a sharp eye and brilliant brain for it, and I love that it even shows up in your music. But please tell us the story of how you turned your husband into an influencer. It is such a good one. And if you're talking business, this is just brilliant.
Well, I think I've worked in social media for around more than 5 years. Like freelance before that, probably 4 years, and then 5 years full-time with brands. And I've always loved looking at how influencers work. I think it's fascinating.
It is.
And I also think it's a real art form, like it's so hard to do, and people always say things like, oh, anyone could do that, and actually it's so difficult to do.
Yeah.
And so I've always really appreciated it, and I have like the people that I look to who are influencers, but as I started working more in-house with brands, I started to notice like just the way it worked, and also that there's a real lack of men.
Right.
So to be totally honest, me and Tom sat 1 year being like, we're in our overdraft, what are we gonna do? And I was like, well, we should sell your lifestyle more.
It's just really resourceful.
Yeah, and I'm like, it was kind of a joke, but then Tom was like, I was basically like, you go on trips all the time, you go on micro adventures, why don't you just film them, and like I can help you edit them, give me 3 weeks, if you hate it, like, you know, we'll stop doing it. And after 3 weeks, I think he had like 8,000 followers on TikTok,
which is amazing.
So it ended up, and now it's something that we really love. I think people sometimes will be like, does it make you not enjoy things? But actually, like, it kind of makes you go out more, because you're like, I'm going to go film something today.
Yeah.
And it helps you remember, like, how much you've done. So it's been really fun. And, I don't help as much now with it, but it's like, it's been a really cool thing.
It's amazing. I mean, I absolutely love it. And you say that you talk about using your creative passions as a business as well, which I think, you know, for creative people, myself being one of them, it can sometimes be hard to think of it in that way.
Yeah.
Your career is you know, you've built it with intent, and your music career too.
Mm.
I mean, your styling and your photo shoots and everything are absolutely gorgeous. Mm. Has that always been a clear plan to you, or have you sort of followed your instincts and let one thing inspire the next? Or?
Yeah, in terms of like the creativity as a business side of things, like, I think it's the only way I keep going.
Because really?
It's so personal. Like, being a creative is, and it can be really like stomach churning when it's your work and it's your, like, you care about it so much.
Yeah.
Particularly like with music, you go through so many, you record, then you've got to see how you feel with this producer and what they add to it, and does it feel right, does it feel wrong, and that it can actually be like so difficult to get it right.
Right.
So I think the thing that keeps me going is seeing it as a little business.
Really?
Because I ran a coffee shop in London for many years. I loved doing it, and I would open up the shop every morning. I'd like greet my regulars. I'd make espresso type thing, and you know, there was, you just do it. You just kind of crack on.
Yeah.
And so for me, like, in order to keep my art form going, I have to kind of treat it like that and be like, right, wake up today. You know, do the little jobs to do with your art and like talk to your customers, you know, the people that like it.
Yeah.
And that helps me to like have a bit more perspective with it.
Yeah.
Because when it's so personal, it can be so easy to like fall over the edge into like complete crazy.
Yeah.
And be like, it's too personal. And so it helps me have that perspective, to have that almost business side to it.
That's so interesting, because watching your music, I mean, yeah. I remember talking to you, it can't be more than 18 months ago, and you're like, I'm just going to do my music.
Yeah.
And you've come so far in that time. I mean, it's been phenomenal to watch. It's so incredibly inspiring.
Yeah.
And do you think it's that mentality that's kind of helped you get to that?
Totally. And I think it's also that sometimes not having that holds people back, because...
Right.
I don't know where, I think where to start, but like, even with social media, you've for people to discover your music, you've kind of got to be quite consistent with TikTok and Instagram and things. And when it has that personal element to it, it can be so difficult to keep doing that, especially if you get, you know, negative comments, or you get people who don't get it, or you land in the wrong audiences.
Yeah.
And so for me, having that element of like, it's just a small business, like, you know, these are the things that you're building, it really helps me to just keep going, which I think is the key.
Because
you won't grow if you don't keep going. So that's been really helpful to see it like that. It kind of, in those moments where you doubt yourself, it allows it to not be personal. Even though it deeply is. But also, I think over my life I've tried lots of different art forms and making them to figure out if they want to be my job. So at one point I had like a lino printing business.
Yeah.
At one point I did a podcast, and all of them were amazing, but they weren't truly me. Like, the music is what I've always wanted to do deep down. And so these ones didn't work because they're not continuable, because they weren't actually that personal.
Right.
So finally entering into music was very vulnerable, because it was like, this is what I've really always wanted, but I haven't done it.
Yeah.
So having that, like, sometimes ability to step back and be like, it's actually just it is really personal, but it also is just this part of it is just a job.
Yeah.
Helps me to kind of balance that feeling of like, oh my gosh, it's too personal. Kind of like just works in my little brain.
Yeah. But those other things that you've tried, the printmaking and things, do you feel like you've learned from those experiences? Have they given you like things that you've been able to take into this?
100%. I wouldn't be a social media manager if I hadn't been a podcast host.
Really?
Because I started that in order to get experience in socials and to build a kind of CV.
Yeah.
So like, each one of them has helped me along the way and helped me refine what I actually wanted to do, which was to do my own music. And then also in promoting those things, I got experience with promotion. So your final thing that you sit on or land on, you then are able to promote it more. So I think, I have no, like, it's quite nice not to feel any regrets about them.
That's brilliant.
Because I've pushed the door and then been like, that's not quite right, or that's not quite right. And then I'm like, this is.
Yeah. Do you know what? I love that analogy. I was talking to someone about it the other day, actually, about pushing the door.
Yeah.
Because I quite often feel like we've all been given a key in life. And sometimes, like, you know, I feel like you go around and you're sort of trying to open doors with it. And sometimes you push it a little bit and it doesn't open, or it opens a crack.
Yeah.
And you try and push harder, but it's not quite happening. And other times it slams in your face. And, your key is for the one where it just opens the door and the door swings wide open.
Yes, yeah. And you just have to keep trying, because if you don't try the doors, you just sat in a room with doors, you know?
Yeah. Sat in a corridor.
Rubbish. But it is that courage to just try it, I think. And sometimes that means looking like a bit of an idiot, but, like, who cares?
Yeah, I mean, does that bother you? I guess, like, a lot of people would see it when something doesn't work as they intend when they set out as 100%. Failure. I guess that's what it's classed under, isn't it?
100%.
And do you view it that way, or you just...
I think it's really hard to get to the point where you don't, but I do think it's possible. For example, like, when I first left... I mean, I have tried everything. When I first left school, I went to drama school.
Yeah.
And I did, like, a start of a three-year course. And I'd, like... I was like the acting girl. Like, I was like, guys, I'm doing it. I'm going to be an actor. Told everyone. And then got into this drama school, like achieved it, and just got there and was like, oh my God, I hate this.
I hate
it so much. Just not for me. Like, it demanded all of you.
Yeah.
And I hated not being able to do other things. I hated not being able to do music. Hated not being able to do art.
Yeah.
And so I dropped out after the second term. And it really felt like a failure for so long.
Did it?
It really, it really affected me. And I really struggled. And nobody else cared. I thought they did.
Yeah.
I was like, they all see me as a drama school dropout. No one did. And, like, now I just think you just hold things lightly.
Yeah.
It's okay if something goes wrong. And if it just... it's not that serious, you know?
Yeah, I was talking to Holly Bendel about this the other day. She was saying something really similar, actually. She was saying that when, she moved into a flat, and after a week she was like, I just don't want to be here.
Yeah.
This just isn't right for me.
Yeah.
And she moved out again, and I was sort of saying, oh, you know, well, actually, a lot of people would be like, oh, my God, but I've got the contract, and I've got this, and I've locked into it, and I've got to see it through, and it's similar for you. You're on a course, and you're telling everyone that you're doing it.
Totally.
And she sort of said, well, actually, you know, when things just don't feel right, I just know it's not right.
Yeah.
And I have to move on. And it's such a powerful thing to be able to do.
Definitely. I think especially at that time, like, I know my family was so proud of me for getting in because it took so long.
Yeah.
And I really felt like, oh my gosh, I'm like, you know, people are not going to understand that I'm saying no to something where, like, you know, the names of all the celebrities that had been there before were, like, engraved on the steps of the school. And I was like, anything. But I just knew it wasn't right. And I knew, and now, you know, moving on, I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah.
And I think it took me a while to feel, like, not a sense of, oh my gosh, I'm quite reckless for dropping out. But actually, over time, I think you build, like, a understanding with yourself of, like, who you actually are. And I know that I'm a really loyal person. I know I'm... when I'm invested in something, I'm really invested.
Yeah.
And I think it's just taken me time to realise that, like, actually that was just that experience and that's okay. And I'm really glad I tried it, because I would have always wondered, for sure.
Yeah.
If I hadn't done it, I'd be going, oh my God, maybe I should go to drama school. I always wanted to.
Yeah, but that's it. You look back with no regrets.
Yeah,
and I guess it sort of joins the dots from where you started to where you are now. Because also, as I've already mentioned, like, you know, your styling and your photography, I mean, they're absolutely beautiful. They're very stylized and considered.
Yes.
They certainly seem considered.
Oh, so deeply. I think too much about them.
Never think too much about them.
Yeah.
So that kind of, when you talk about your music being a business as well, is it the whole vision that you're...
Yes. I actually, like, I think I remember Charlie XCX talking about this earlier in the year, where she was like, she said something like, she's more excited about the marketing of her music sometimes than she is about the music.
Really?
Even though she's obviously an amazing musician.
Mm.
And that's not to say I'm more excited, but I love both.
Yeah.
But I love everything about it. I love building a project and, like, building a world and telling that story.
Yeah.
And that's what excites me. And the storytelling is much beyond just the music side of things.
Yeah.
The imagery, particularly for my first EP... was so purposeful and really funny. I just got a DM from a girl on TikTok who was like, I'd like to photograph your EP. And I was like, okay, if it was a scam. And then she was like, I'll meet you in Cornwall. She lives in Edinburgh.
Oh, my Lord.
Like, I'll meet you in Cornwall. Like, let's go and do it. And I was like, okay, sure, thinking she's not going to show up on the day.
Yeah.
And she does, and she did the whole thing. She did 5 images for each single. She did all my profile photos.
Oh, really?
And we had a call beforehand where I just said, like, look, let's just do something crazy. If we're going to go do it, like, let's go and get in a tidal pool in a fake fur coat. let's make a bed in a tidal pool. Let's do something fun. And she was like, yeah, let's go for it. Like,
yeah.
And we did. And so I think, like, yeah, I think she was like, I don't think anyone sent me a PowerPoint before about, like, what they want. But I was like, I just think a tight brief is a gift. Like,
yeah.
If I was like, I'd rather we both knew what was going on. So I sent her, like, little references. I sent her what the songs were about. I sent her the songs themselves. And then I sent her Pinterest boards and put them into a presentation and was like, this is the kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And then we did it together. And the same with kind of everything is, like, building that vision of what it kind of means. And yeah, I love that side of things. So it really excites me. That's, like, just as exciting as the project itself.
Yeah. Sort of working on a, you know, PowerPoints and things, I guess it's like a version of a vision board in a way, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, mood boards to, yeah, so that you're really clear on what your destination is.
That's it. And, like, that it leaves room for a little bit of, like, you know, creative flow. Like, in the moment you might be like, this looks really cool, but it also means that you know kind of where you're going and you can kind of go there, which is really fun.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, you're, I mean, you have such an incredible, like, contagious personality.
Yeah.
And you sort of just are this wave of fun. And it just comes across in your, like, in everything that you do. But
that's really nice.
That kind of sense of play and, yes, you know, talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think I've probably always had that, like, that sense of play. Like, I remember, maybe it was just a bit crazy. But I do remember, like, as a kid walking along, like, St. Ives, like, one of the beaches in St. Ives, and, like, stepping on each stone, and I was, like, making up a story, and I'd, like, sing the story to myself. So, like, I definitely have always had this sense of, like, play, which I love. And I think as an adult, it's been about kind of coming back to that, because I think,
yeah,
I lost it in, like, all the, you know, dropping out of drama school, the fear of failure and the weight of, like, oh my God, what does success look like? All these adults seem to care about success, and I don't really understand what it means. And, like, I've had to kind of come back to actually what does that look like for me.
And, yeah.
And, yeah, especially in the last 2 years, post-lockdown, kind of coming out of that, I've kind of come back to a lot of elements of me that were me as a kid.
Really?
Yeah, like, music was really special to me growing up. And I think, yeah, like, coming back to that. And also, I think, I don't know if you had this, but as a kid, like, I had a very naive sense of, like, I'll just go out in the world and I'll, you know, like when you watch a chick flick and they're like an
yeah,
editor or something,
yeah,
an editor of Vogue, and you're like, I will do the same. I will walk into Vogue and they will call me the editor. Like, I think I had that, especially leaving, like, Devon where I grew up. Well, I shouldn't confess that because I live in Cornwall, but
yeah, exactly.
Cut that from podcast.
About scones and
yeah,
scream in a minute.
But no, I think I had that leaving Devon, and then it was,
yeah,
kind of like came crashing down when I moved to London and went to drama school, and they really, like, break you down in terms of, like, they're really strict and they're really, like, critical.
Mm.
And it took a really long time for me to build confidence back up again.
Mm.
And now it's been about being like, oh my gosh, everyone's an adult, everyone's making it up, just do what you want to do.
Mm.
And play, and yes, there might be some people who've got more experience, but, like, great, learn from them, play, there's nothing wrong with trying.
Yeah.
And yeah, kind of, I think as I was reaching, I'm like, I'm 29 now, but I could feel 30 coming along, and I was like, I don't want to reach that time and not have tried things.
Amazing.
Just because I'm scared, like, scared that I'm not a certain, I think I had this in my head that I was, like, not the music girl, or I was not,
yeah,
the something girl. And then I was just like, who said that? No,
yeah,
no one comes out of the womb the music girl. Like,
yeah,
we all pick on identities and put them on and try them on. And
yeah,
it's important to just be like, you are just holding yourself back with that viewpoint. So challenge it and try.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's been really fun to keep that sense of play and softness.
Yeah. And it's lovely that you talk about being a child as well, because you do have a real sense, like, you love dressing up.
Oh, I love dressing up, yeah.
There's a real sense of, like, that little girl dress up in front of the mirror, just carefree, just, like, living her best life.
Yeah, I love dressing up. Yeah, I don't necessarily know all the rules of fashion like you will. but I do just think, like, if it makes you happy, put it on, you know? And, like, and I think we all take elements of the things we've grown up with, like, and I think that's what makes you unique as an artist. And for me, like, I grew up, my mum's like a religious Jane Austen watcher.
Yes.
Loves it. Little Women. Or, well, that's not Jane Austen, but, you know. And, sorry, she'll be like, if not Jane Austen. but, like, yeah, wearing, like, antique nightgowns and things like that make me feel, like, close to my childhood self growing up with those sisters on the TV and on in the books.
Yeah.
And then I think, yeah, that's been a really special thing to, like, honour those things that you grew up with. And
absolutely.
And I remember, like, watching a video last year where Lizzie McAlpine, who's an artist, she was saying, like, someone was saying, like, what helped you make it as an artist? And she was like, you just have to keep being yourself, because that is the most unique you'll ever be.
Wow.
Is when you drill into what's you.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I've heard that before, but I've been like, what is myself? I don't know yet.
Mm.
And it's taken me so long to get there. And now I feel like, oh my gosh, I understand a bit more.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just stripping back the layers and being like, finding more of yourself.
Yeah, it's quite frightening to do that though, isn't it? Because I suppose I went through a similar thing in a very different way. Mm. And I think, you know, I did sort of all the conventional things. I moved to London, I got a really good job. Actually decided I wanted to select a different life, moved to Cornwall, but kind of fell into the same groove that I was in London in Cornwall.
Yeah.
And it wasn't actually until my marriage broke up, and it made me really question, like, oh my God, what do you want? Yeah, what do I want? Who the hell am I? Like,
yeah.
How has life got me to here? Like, what is it that I want? And you kind of have to go, or I did certainly, into, like you say, I explored my childhood a lot. I went right back to the beginning.
Yeah.
And it was a really frightening place to be as well. It was like, oh my God, you know, there's elements of yourself myself that I felt a little bit embarrassed about. There were elements that I was proud of. There are elements of, like, oh my God, I used to be that. Where has that gone?
Yes. You know,
it's like it was quite a painful totally. Process. To kind of get there in some ways.
It is, and it's not easy to, like, trust that the you will be on the other side. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, to trust, it's just, it's very scary to trust that they'll be better for you.
Yes.
Or trust that you could have a better life.
Yes.
So much easier to just sit in the routine of, okay, well, this does the job, you know, like, nobody seems to be offended by what I'm doing, or, you know.
Yeah.
And just to keep going and actually, like, to believe in more and to believe in bigger for yourself, I think is, like, it's really challenging. It's not easy, but it is really worth it.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And I have to talk to you about your childhood. Yeah,
of course.
Because it's, you know, it's quite an unusual childhood. You grew up in a commune.
I did grow up in a commune,
and your dad was the head of the commune.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, what an experience.
Totally,
Do you think that's, like, what influence has that had on where you are today with your music and the choices that you've made and having to go back, and when you talked about going back and revisiting your childhood.
Yes, how that feels.
Yeah.
Yeah, gosh, I mean, that's enough for a whole podcast in itself.
It is.
Yeah, I grew up in a very, like, rural kind of retreat centre commune, like, community in Devon. Look about the location. it was not, I didn't realise how different it was at the time, because you're just in it, you know, and it was quite euphoric at the time. Like, you're living in the middle of nowhere in the most beautiful landscape you could imagine.
Yeah.
The most beautiful, it's south-facing, you know. The sunsets every night.
Sun all day.
Yeah, sun all day.
In Devon.
Sunset every night. Beautiful and, very, like, it was a commune of people that had the same beliefs. It's like kind of a part of religion.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways it's very euphoric because you're all, no one disagrees that much anyway.
Yeah.
Not greatly. I think it was really euphoric, and then it was really challenging leaving and having to make my way in the real world and realizing that, like, not everywhere's like that.
Yeah.
But also that maybe wasn't always right. Like, it wasn't, there were parts of it that were amazing and there were parts of it that weren't great.
Mm.
And I think coming to terms with that, I'm sure everybody has that with, like, their family unit and things, but I guess, yeah, mine's quite different, having like a commune almost. So
yeah,
it was really interesting. It really, growing up in that environment, because it was really rural and I couldn't drive, I was 45 minutes from sort of my school. I had to learn to like entertain myself a lot. So
right.
I spent a lot of time like doing art and doing music and learning, like just watching videos of Laura Marling on YouTube and
Amazing.
Copying her.
Yeah.
And so, and then it also made me very good at communication, so I'm really good texter backer, because if you text me, I will text back. I'm used to it.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah,
I can testify.
But it was quite, you know, there has been times where I've revisited it and it's been quite sad, like, you know, when I've walked past the house I used to live in and being like, oh gosh, I was very alone in that time, like,
right.
Even though there was lots of people around, they were a lot older than me, and so I became very artistic and very creative, but I also felt like when I walked past the house once, I was like, oh my gosh, I can see myself in the living room just hours and hours on end of like painting and doing things, because I was quite alone.
Right.
So like there are, and like that's not the worst childhood you can have, but it was definitely, there were moments like that.
Yeah.
So I think as I look back, I'm like, wow, it's made me the most creative person I could ever be.
Wow.
But it's also, there's also some pain there, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I am definitely, like, if you leave me on my own, I'll find something to do, because I'm very used to it. Like, my partner Tom, like, on a day off, sometimes he feels totally lost, and I'm like, well, I've started three paintings. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I love it, because you are so creative. I remember, you know, when you started your gigs and things, it wasn't just like, I'm going to do a gig. You've got, like, a whole festival going on.
Yeah.
You've, like,
got
stalls, and like, all sorts of creative things going on at your gigs. And
stuff. Totally. I think, like, that's also come from that side of things, where it's, you know, it's a retreat centre, so it was like events management.
Yeah.
So I'm very much like, the people will be fed and watered, and like, here's what I'm going to do to make it a bit extra special. And I think there's experiences from that that have been really special. I think also, like, it did provide like a very safe place to try things out at times. Like, I could go and play music there, and that was really special. But yeah, it's very unique, and I think it actually just took me a really long time to adapt to real life afterwards, which is why I've come to music a little bit later than many people do.
Yeah.
Because I think it just took me a really long time to be like, the normal world. I don't live with 80 people now, so how does this work? And it was a really hard adaption. And then I think I also, I mean, there's so much to say about it, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it's like, amazing.
I think especially after COVID, I kind of had a moment to stop and be like, okay, like, how shall we go forward? Like, what do we really want? And yeah.
So that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. You talked a little bit about some pain there. Mm-hmm. And I know, you have to tell us, whilst we're talking about a bit of pain, about the billboard that you crowdfunded. I mean, it's such an amazing story, and people have to hear about this.
I'm on the lookout for a billboard still. So if anybody wants to find me a good billboard, I need to look for my next one. But yeah, basically I just had... I think everybody has a moment in their life where someone said something and it stuck with you.
Yeah.
And whether that person had ill intentions or not, it does stick with you.
It does, yeah.
And I was doing The Artist's Way. I don't know if you've ever done it.
No.
It's like a workbook to help you kind of uncover your inner artist. Or kind of like shed skin and be like, not hold yourself back and be more creative. And I was reading it, and one of the things was like to write down things that people have said to you across your life that you've held.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those for me was that this like... man when I was younger told he I was singing in a band with him, and he went, can you even harmonize?
Oh,
I think I was like, I was not old enough to be yelled at.
And I love, like, your music is full of the most beautiful harmonies.
I mean, if there's anything that came from that, I really learned to harmonize. But he said that really slightly, and I was a new song, I hadn't learned it, so it was really like unhelpful, and it really stuck with me. And then for years after that, I kind of internalized it and thought, I can't sing.
Yeah.
Or like, I'm not a good singer, I can't do this. And so I was already feeling that before. And so, when I was doing this recent campaign for my EP, I put on my Instagram, like, if anybody wants to fund a billboard that I could put at the end of the street, that could be quite fun. And people really wanted to.
Brilliant.
In about a week, I had like £150 or something.
Oh my God.
Not, you know, loads of money, but enough to get a small poster.
Yeah.
So I'm figuring out where it's going to go.
Amazing.
That would be a really fun thing to do, and just quite, you know, again, like back to your inner child of what your inner child needed at that time.
Yeah.
Just to feel validating and be like, oh, that, you know, that feels great.
Really empowering.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I said you were a little bit cheeky. Yeah. And that just kind of sums it up. But Essie, thank you so much. It's just been such a joy talking to you. I've loved hearing more about your music, your journey, and the way you're creating all of this on your own terms. It has been such a brilliant conversation. I've enjoyed every second of it, actually.
Thank you.
Thank you for being so open, grounded, and generous with your story. From building a music career with heart to trusting your creative instincts to walking your own path, everything you've shared speaks right to the heart of what the Follow Yourself experiment is all about. But before I wrap up, is there anything you'd like to leave listeners with? Maybe a little message of encouragement for someone who's standing on the edge of a big decision, wondering if they're brave enough to choose their own way?
There are three things I will say. One is, just do it when you're thinking about it. Like we were saying earlier today, about the podcast you're starting and about even music projects I'm doing, is like, if you're thinking about it, in that moment, just get up and start doing something about it. It doesn't mean you need to finish the project, but just put something out there that moves towards that goal.
Yeah.
Because it can be so easy to say you want to do something for ages and not do it.
But yes.
In that moment of like, oh, I'd love to do that, stand up to the laptop, to the notebook, begin. The other thing I'd say is, any type of doing something, you will have to be seen trying, and that is very vulnerable. But you just can't do it without that. And so you have to accept that you will need to be seen trying.
Yes.
And it is okay. And it's beautiful.
It is.
And actually, the more you allow yourself that, the more you'll be happy for other people when they're doing it. And it will just make your life brighter by being like, I'm okay to be imperfect and not perfect yet.
Yes.
And the final thing I'd say is, just post that TikTok. Post the TikTok. I think I had something else to say, but I can't remember. But yeah, you don't have to be the final product. It's okay to be in the process, and that's exciting.
Yeah, really exciting.
Oh, I remember.
Go for it.
When you're on the edge of doing something good for yourself, it will feel uncomfortable. It will just feel, you're clearing space for a new self, you're clearing space for a new path for yourself, and that means you've had to clear the path.
Yeah.
And then an empty path is always going to be daunting.
Yeah.
You don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
So like, but it just doesn't mean you don't do it. But just like, that's okay to sit in that for a while,
you know?
And yeah, exciting.
That is so, so beautifully put, and such a wonderful note to finish on. Thank you so much. Thanks again, Essie. Thank you for your story, your cheekiness, the fact that you're doing it with guts and grace. It's all so inspiring. And yeah, thank you for listening to the Follow Yourself experiment. Thank you for listening to the Follow Yourself experiment. If you enjoyed it, share it with someone who needs a little nudge to follow their own direction, and I'll see you next time.